Welcome to Betrayal Trauma Recovery, BTR.org. I'm Anne. I'm sure you remember what it was like when you were searching for help, maybe for your husband, hoping to find the right program or therapist. That's why I started podcasting. I supported my husband through 7 years of pornography addiction recovery, and not one therapist during that time told me I was experiencing emotional and psychological abuse and sexual coercion. I didn't want any other woman on the planet to be in the dark. If you're like me, one simple, anonymous way to help spread the word is to click follow or subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. While you're there, every 5-star rating also makes this podcast more visible and will help save other women from getting the wrong kind of help, like a couple program that'll make this type of abuse worse. If you've already purchased a copy of my book, Trauma Mama Husband Drama, please circle back and give it a 5-star rating. A lot of women are searching for books about betrayal trauma, and rating Trauma Mama will help them find this podcast, which is free to everyone. If you're like the majority of my listeners, you're experiencing the type of abuse that's invisible and difficult to wrap your head around. Your husband is using porn or having affairs or lying to you, and you're getting the same bad advice about how to improve communication or your relationship. If you need real support, check out our daily group session schedule at btr.org. We'd love to see you in a session today. Welcome to BTR.org. I'm Anne. I have Kathy Kinghorn on today's episode. She is the co-owner and CEO of Therapy Utah. Kathy is an expert in sex and pornography addiction, childhood trauma, and sexual abuse. Welcome, Kathy.
Hey, nice to be here.
Yes. So Kathy and I are friends in real life, and she is awesome. I really appreciate all of her work. And she came up with a really cool video for kids. So we're going to start with that because I showed my kids this video and they really liked it. They're familiar with this type of idea, right? So this was not something new to them, but I liked and they liked how you presented the idea of someone who doesn't have integrity in such a kid-friendly way.
I was pondering on how to teach my 16 grandchildren about people that would harm them. And when you teach a child, as you know, you're oftentimes taking away their innocence. You're introducing ideas that really remove some innocence. I was pondering it, and the thought came into my mind, well, magicians trick people. And I thought, that's true. Yes. And everybody thinks that's funny, but then everybody knows it's a trick. And as I started kind of building on that idea, and I'm telling you, I believe I was led, it allowed me to see this is a gentle approach to introducing tricky people to kids.
I like the term tricky people because bad people is such a loaded word. You're not going to use it, but even if we did, which I don't, but even if I did, they don't look bad. So bad doesn't really help little kids.
It really doesn't, because this type of individual actually uses good works to trick them. So I loved it too. And I was actually able to try it out on my grandkids. And what happened was this beautiful dialogue that went as deep as they needed to go individually.
Yeah, that's really cool. My daughter, she loves nonfiction books, and she really gravitates to the books that Educate and Empower Kids come out with. And she can read them over and over. And so this stuff she finds to be really interesting. She also really likes cognitive behavioral therapy workbooks for kids. She's a pre-therapist, apparently. But so this really resonated with her because she's 9. We'll put this video on this episode so everybody can see it.
The only thing I would say is watch it by yourself first so that you kind of have an idea, and then lay it out to the kiddos.
Learning about it when you're young is cool because it wasn't anything that was introduced to me. And in fact, it was the opposite. It was like, good people do these things. Check, 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 right? They go to church. They wear a tie. Mm-hmm. They read their scripture. It was like these check boxes of things we were supposed to look for rather than really following our gut and the spirit, and also observing to see if someone was actually doing what they said they were going to do. Mm-hmm. So observing their actions. Introducing it to kids is super important. So teaching kids that tricky people are purposefully presenting something, and the intent of these tricky people is to control, is to have an outcome that they want. They're exploiting the child in some way. So let's transition to talk about how knowing that the point of their manipulation, gaslighting, psychological abuse is to control, how can we help adult victims of tricky people? In the case of the listeners of this podcast, specifically women who are married to men who are like this.
Transitioning to adults, and again, Anne mentioned that I specialize in sexual addiction. And it is a truth that if somebody has an active addiction, they have very specific traits. All active addicts do. Just narrowing that down to somebody with a sexual addiction, if you ask them, what's the best thing about your last relapse? What was the best thing about it? The quick and easy answer is the obvious one, right? The lust hit. Of course it is. But that's not accurate. And when I present this in a group, more often than not, two or three men will know. And if they don't know, as soon as I say it, every head nods in agreement. And so back to the question, what was the best thing about your last relapse? It's the control. Let me explain this a little bit more. We have two reward centers in our brain. We have one that's called anticipatory. So right now, if I said, hey, Anne, do you want to go to lunch tomorrow? My mouth is salivating because I love their pastrami burger. And I'm not making this up. My mouth is actually, I have more saliva in my mouth right now, just broaching the subject of getting one. So what that means is I'm anticipating. My body is already going, oh man, I can anticipate that. Now, once we get there and I'm taking that first bite of my hamburger, the consummatory reward center kicks in. I'm consuming it. In the moment, I'm enjoying it. So two different reward centers. Once you get into an addiction, the hit from the lust and the hit from the acting out really diminishes over time. The quality isn't there. The intensity isn't there. And so the consummatory reward center can actually go completely offline in an addict's brain. They can say, in all truthfulness, I hate looking at porn. I hate it. I mean, I do it to get off, but Kathy, I promise you, I'm not getting anything out of it. All that's telling me is that their consummatory reward center has gone completely offline. So the anticipatory one, that's the one that they want to hang on to as long as they can. Because as I'm anticipating, again, going back to my analogy, if I'm going to anticipate that burger, it might be the best burger I've ever had. And I can make that burger out to be anything I want as I'm anticipating it. So I want to lengthen this time as long as possible. So oftentimes you'll get a spouse who sees an energy shift, and they may use a different word, but they see a shift in their spouse. They're detached, they're disconnected in maybe a different way, or maybe the same way, but because it happens so frequently. But what's happening is that anticipatory reward center is part of the addiction cycle. They're starting to get really into that fantasy. They're really trying to enjoy it, and they're trying to let it kind of slowly percolate for them. They want to have the control of when they finally do get into the consummatory reward center. They want to control that moment as much as possible. The interesting thing to me on this too, Anne, is that when you're dealing with somebody with an active addiction, there's a lot of things they don't know. There's a lot of things that are confusing to them. Empathy. There's no way an active addict understands empathy. There's no way they understand boundaries. Genuinely, I am not letting them off the hook. I'm just saying hard concepts for them to understand. There's a few topics, and this is one of them. where when I say it's control, boom, they get it. They know it. It's a truth for them. If they weren't conscious of it before, they are now. And they're like, yeah, actually, it is the control. I like having that control. And it's not that they just like it. They're using it as much as they can in the hopes that when they actually do consume it, it will be better than ever.
Here at BTR, rather than calling sex addicts sex addicts, I just put them in the category of abusive. And the reason I do that is because their actions are abusive. And it's interesting to me that in you saying this, control is what abuse is. Coercive control, control of how someone views you, making sure that you're controlling the narrative. So the gaslighting, the manipulation, also being able to control how sex works. They're like super abusive. It's interesting to me that they know that they're controlling and they know they're an addict, but they don't know that they're abusive. Do you know what I'm saying?
The control there is for their own pleasure, right?
Because if the scenario doesn't take place the way that they plan, then it's not as pleasurable to them. So whether they're going to do it with someone else, like act out with porn or act out with a prostitute, or if they're going to abuse their wife in order to do it, if it doesn't go the way they want, it's not as enjoyable to them. But because they can't feel empathy, they're also going to be pretty angry.
It can't go right. And I think it's important for the spouse to know that. Because let's say that a husband comes to one of your followers and he says, you know, I'd kind of like for you to show up in lingerie at the front door and, I don't know, just spice it up. And the spouse goes, I'm okay with that. You know what? Why not? That aligns with my values. It's between me and him, right? So he opens the front door and there she is. And she's in a red lingerie. And she says, hey, baby, instantly you're going to see anger, usually. And here's why. It's because they're in fantasy. They fantasized about this forever. You can't be in fantasy and reality at the same time. He might try to tap the anger in, but what happens is a real person can't be a fantasy. If they have a problem with fantasy, it will show up in their anger.
Well, also, if they have a problem with control, it'll show up, right? They're not controlling because they're angry. Their anger didn't come first. They're angry because they're controlling. They expect that things should go a certain way and that really that their wife is not a person, but sort of an extension of their own fantasy. And she's not doing what she's supposed to do.
I'm sure you've heard people say, you know, you're just in denial. But I think it's better to finish the sentence. You could say, I think you're denying reality.
When you say, I think you're in denial, are you talking to the addict when you say that?
Yeah, they're denying reality. And there's two ways to move in the world. You can be in reality or not. And so what, and think
it's,
about.
It's pretty clear. I love that.
Yeah. Think about in fantasy, they do have control. But here's the problem with it, Anne. They don't just have control. They have perfect control. In fantasy, it's perfectly scripted. They're the director and the editor, and it's perfect. Once you get into reality, now you're the creators, and it's messy and complicated and unpredictable. But what happens is, for a lot of different reasons, they'll have a fantasy, and we don't have time to unpackage all the reasons, but the fantasy will be their favorite, and they'll go back to it again and again and again. And if you interrupt them halfway through it, let's say they're kind of driving down the road and they're in their fantasy and they get a phone call. They hang up the phone. They don't go back to where they got interrupted. They have to go back to the start. And that's because they want that perfect script. And then they have perfect control, right? Within the fantasy, whether they're pleasing 10 women or the victim of 10 women, they have perfect control on how that plays out.
In their own heads.
Mm-hmm.
And then real people get hurt in the process.
Yeah, for sure.
Why is control the most important thing rather than like truth or?
Because by definition, if you're an addict, you are out of control in some area of your life, potentially all of it. You're out of control. You don't know when you wake up if you're going to stay with your stated values or if you're going to end up being 3 hours late back from lunch because you're cruising around downtown Salt Lake. You really genuinely don't know. What happens is you're out of control. So you want to take unhealthy control because you know you can't control yourself. I know that doesn't make sense. It's like,
the reason it doesn't make sense is because if they need to take control because they don't have control, then why do they not take control in a different way? Like, why do they act out with control instead of being like, okay, I'm going to wake up every morning at 5 and work out? There's other ways to be quote unquote controlling. I'm going to make sure that my house is clean. I am going to help my kids get to school on time.
The problem is that I think there's dark forces involved and they want to control us in a super unhealthy way.
I agree.
You're not going to have a healthy solution when you're involved in unhealthy behavior. You could think, you know what? I need to do XYZ and that'll help me move away from it. And oftentimes men do. Men do make the choice to control themselves. But think about it. When we're in victim, it's also because I've lost all control and everybody's picking on me. Control shows up in a lot of interesting places. So I'm either a victim of not having any control of my life, or I'm going to control everybody in my life. But either end of the spectrum is unhealthy.
Let's talk about that one end of the spectrum for a minute. Like, I have no control when they play the victim. And they're playing the victim in that case, but they are actually not the victim and they are actually the opposite. Like, they're trying to control things, but they're claiming that they're being controlled. My wife is so controlling when she's saying things like, hey, this isn't fun for me. I don't enjoy it. If you're going to act this way, I don't want to have sex, which is a totally reasonable thing to say. And then he comes back with, you're so controlling. You want to control sex. So why do they claim to be controlled when their attempts at control are not working?
It's because they just have an unhealthy relationship with what healthy control looks like. And again, I'm not justifying their behavior, but I do see, you know, individuals who believe here is how it is to be a man in the world.
If your wife tells you, hey, it really, really hurts me when you look at porn. Someone has told them. At the very least, your wife. Does she not count as someone?
Absolutely. If they continue either lying about it or looking at it, then it's likely at some point they're going to lose that relationship.
I think the reason I bring that up is so many wives, they think maybe he doesn't know that it's bad. And one of the questions I ask is, well, have you told him it is? And they're like, yeah, multiple times. And I'm like, and has he gone to therapy? Yeah, he's been like multiple times. And has he ever been to church? Yeah, he has. Has he ever watched a TV show where someone got put in jail for lying or committing fraud? Yeah, he has. So like the idea that like they didn't know that that was wrong, lying to your wife, it's almost comical. Should a wife really have to tell her husband, like, don't lie to me? I mean, it seems like that's pretty basic. I just worry that women will spend more time educating their abuser rather than getting to safety when he's already had so many opportunities to be educated about it. It only keeps her in the abuse cycle. It doesn't really help her get to safety because that's what keeps her stuck. Maybe it's because people tell women that they can say something 17 times, but if they say it the 18th time, it's going to make a difference. I worry that women will focus more on like, how can I get him educated rather than how can I get to safety? So in that case, if a woman is focused on safety, how would knowing that this is all about control help her to get to safety?
I think to understand that an active addict isn't an active addict just when he's looking at pornography or whatever his sexual behavior is. That's not the only time. It comes out in a variety of ways. It comes out with resentment, anger, control. Instead of just thinking, well, you know, he said he's always had an anger problem, it's like, connect the dots and go, okay, controlling and anger are part of an addiction. It's not his personality. It's not, you know, other things. It's part of having an addiction. Resentment is part of having an addiction.
So how does that help her get to safety, knowing that?
Everything needs to be unpackaged and looked at. And oftentimes, more often than not, he's going to need professional help in some way to understand what safety is. For her and him, it's highly likely that neither one of them know clearly what safety feels like. So for example, she might go, I feel safe when I know he's happy. You know, so that's not her understanding safety, right? Any more than when he says, well, I feel safe when my wife goes to bed at 9 and I can just be up at night. I'm not hurting anyone.
So how does it help her get to safety?
To have her examine what is safety for her. Who taught her that that was safe? I have so many clients that say, well, my mom's just said to just have sex with him.
Mm-hmm.
And basically mom's saying, keep yourself safe, keep having sex with him, right?
I'm like, Kathy, it's 2024 and people are still saying this?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Really?
I literally just had a client over the Christmas break. Yes, that's not uncommon. And if it's not out and out said, it's certainly implied, but it's still said.
It's like shocking to me that people are still in the mode where they don't recognize it as abuse and sexual coercion and like sometimes flat out rape. Right? That their mother-in-law is sexually coercing them is like crazy.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Kathy, thank you for being patient with me. I've been doing this for a long time. And my goal was to get the word out to everyone that this is sexual coercion. It is emotional and psychological abuse. It hurts my heart. When I get past my anger and my annoyance, I think the thing that really is happening is that I'm actually devastated that there are still women that don't know. Devastated that women are still trying to get emotional safety and psychological safety and sexual safety, but they don't know what that means. They think, oh, if I have sex with him more, I'll be safe, right? But they don't know what it means. They don't even really know what they're looking at or what they're experiencing. That's what hurts my heart. And I think that's kind of like today, I'm like, why is this still happening? Why is this a thing?
Well, I love your heart and your listeners love your heart.
You're awesome, Kathy. Thank you so much for taking the time. And that video that we talked about in the beginning, that will be on our website. So please go to btr.org to see that. If this podcast is helpful to you, please help us reach other women by pushing that follow or subscribe button and giving us a 5-star rating. Thank you for helping get the word out. Your donations keep this podcast going. Go to our website, btr.org, scroll to the bottom, click on Support the BTR Podcast. And until next week, stay safe out there.